Hey everybody, Seth here with a very rare experience, a pre-pre-pre-roll for this episode. As you'll hear during the episode, we're trying out a few new recording tools because the one we typically use doubled in price and weren't really happy about that. This one did not go well. For that, we apologize. Did our best to make it vaguely coherent, but yeah, sorry.
Foz is opposed to it because it has AI in the URL, and I'm not going to lie, I briefly considered not using it for that same reason.
I would be okay with you not using it for that reason.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 545 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by our usual cast of characters, Mr. Foz Mamoon and Mr. Seth Miller. Gentlemen,
hi. Good evening.
We're trying a new tool for recording the show. So if there's any hiccups, forgive us.
Blame Seth.
No, don't blame Seth. We gotta figure something out. I mean, I think our cost doubled overnight. So let's talk about American Airlines and the rejected takeoff and evacuation at Denver. So this was Friday, or was this Saturday?
Saturday,
yes.
It sounds like from what we can figure out, like the plane American was going to take off, used a bunch of different runways. They were trying to figure out which runway they were going to use because of winds. And then on the takeoff roll, they rejected the takeoff, a wheel brake fire. And then the gear collapsed and the plane evacuated on the runway. And so Denver had a ground stop for a little while.
I didn't see the collapsed gear. Was that in that same video or did that happen after?
It looks like it in the video. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, did the gear itself actually collapse under the heat, or was it just like an artifact of like the picture in the video?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't see the angle of like it seeming askew and engine resting on the ground. So
yeah, it didn't look like the engine was on the ground. That's why I was confused. So, but I think the big takeaway is leave your damn bags behind. Holy crap.
Listen, like, if you've got your daughter in your arms and three backpacks in the other hand, you're probably doing something wrong. Just spitballing here. I don't know.
I mean, is that the guy that almost ate it?
Yeah, it was the first one that went down. The infant in arms with the backpack on. At least it was a backpack on.
Nope. I'm not even touching
it. I mean, because there was one guy. I mean, he could have seriously hurt the kiddo and probably himself.
Yeah.
You know, and blocked the entire slide for everybody else. Yeah, don't do that. Please stop. And I know we got back when we were on Twitter, we got a bunch of crap about saying that. People were like, I would take my bag. Just leave it behind. I'm like, what the? Anyway.
Also, maybe actually evacuate and leave the plane fire area instead of taking the video. But that's a list.
That too. Yeah. This American, and it's going to be a heavy American show, as Foz pointed out. American announced a new standard. They're calling it, what are they calling this? OSS?
Is that One-stop security.
Yeah. And this is at DFW that they're doing it?
Yeah.
So what is it?
This is the closest thing the United States has had to transit immigration clearance in decades.
Okay, so it wasn't just me.
You know, go back a long time and there was at least the theoretical concept of passengers in transit through the United States might be able to not clear immigration. They'd remain in a sterile area and then after arriving and then sort of be shuttled into the departure, like so a separate entrance to the departure jetway for their onward connection. So Newark Terminal C, the C3 pier, was designed for this. There's actually a hold room upstairs at the far end where if you arrive, as you walk by, it says something like immigration waiting area or something like that on the door. And now they use it for, I think, wheelchair. But Continental built out its international pier there. There's a few spaces that are designed for this. And post 9/11, the government was like, never mind.
Mm.
And so this version of it is basically at DFW, passengers arriving from London. There's a couple gates there that are available. They basically built a immigration hold room upstairs rather than having to go into into the basement, into the main CBP space. And
good evening.
You show up, you line up in the jet bridge instead of in the main CBP area. But because it's dedicated agents and only a couple hundred passengers, the theory is you clear pretty quickly. If you're at the front of the plane, you obviously clear much faster. And no matter what, your bags, if you have checked bags, are checked through. If you're arriving at DFW, your bags go to baggage claim. but you basically clear at the jet bridge instead of going all the way through regular house. And so if you have an onward connection,
yes,
like in theory, eventually minimum connect times could drop because you don't have to re-clear security and recheck your bag.
So is it dropping? It's you go through the immigration and then it drops you right back in
your.
Okay.
It's not for actual regular arriving passengers. Oh, you know, I didn't ask that question. I believe as I understand it, it's everybody.
It's
especially useful for connecting passengers because they don't have to re-clear security and re-clear immigration or re-clear check bags. But either way, it's not quite pre-clearance. You don't just walk off the plane, but and you don't get global entry benefit. That was the one thing. Like there isn't a global entry kiosk though. You're stuck in the same line as everybody else, but it's basically they built a secure immigration space at the gate. So think of it like Berlin, old Berlin Tegel arrivals.
Yeah. And so you come in through this thing and then you clear immigration. You're connecting bags, just go straight to the next flight, I assume.
Yeah.
And then you just walk out into the terminal. Like it was like you're now domestic.
You're in terminal D like everybody else.
Interesting.
So that is one of the challenges. Like coming home the other day when we were in Wales and England, like right, Lynette and I flew home to Boston. We were sitting way at the back. We were like seven rows from the back of the plane. By the time everybody got off the plane, we, you know, walked around the crowd and went straight to global entry. I think we would have lost potentially, you know, if they did this in Boston. The only thing I'll say is in theory, at least it's a much shorter walk also.
Mm.
So the time, you know, we were at the front of the line, but it still took us 15 minutes or 12 minutes to walk all the way around and through the tunnels and whatever to get to the agent and the kiosks for global entry. You don't do any of that, but in DFW, at least, baggage claim is sort of right outside. It's not a long walk to baggage claim. So
I mean, the one thing I would say about the global entry piece is like, why wouldn't they add like one or two kiosks, like one kiosk?
It feels like an agent to handle it all. My guess is those. And remember that these days, immigration arrivals is basically all facial recognition anyways. Mm-hmm. I would assume as you walk up, it'll pop up and be like, this person has global entry, just say a yes, right? Like,
yeah.
It'll already recognize you, so it's effectively global entry, it's just you're not a separate line because they need a dedicated agent to handle that line.
Okay.
Well, I guess we're not keeping this one.
You can hear us talking.
Yeah. Oh,
there he is. Okay.
Us.
So I'm going to say a no to this platform?
Yeah, that's what just said. I'm not giving this one.
Yeah, so I could hear you guys. You couldn't hear me, so I saw both of you are still here, but whatever. Where was I? I was talking about
Chicago.
So I've seen the single kiosk in Chicago, which was fine, not an issue. I've seen it in Dulles, again, not an issue. I think it was Dulles. Houston, last week, abysmal. You get down to global entry, and there's a line of 35, 40 people with an agent telling people how to look at the camera. And I don't know how this is supposed to be more efficient because, unfortunately, people don't know how to use global entry half the time.
To be fair, they also keep changing global entry.
But it's been pretty much the same where you just look at the camera.
So then what happens? Like you go to this one kiosk and then you go to an agent? Or is it you go to the kiosk and you're done?
So there will be an agent with their iPad or whatever their tablet is. It'll show up on their name if you're cleared out and they'll let you out.
Oh, interesting. So you don't go through the regular like desk gate area. Like gating area.
Well, there's an agent. It's like global entry always was, even with the multiple kiosks where you would go to the kiosks and then you'd see the agent. They call your name like you experience. Similar to that. In this case, the multiple machines are being replaced by a single machine. The thing is, the new machines are able to scan multiple people at the same time. So you could be, I've seen it where it scans two, like someone, the person in front and the person right behind it and clears both of them at the same time.
That's weird.
Well, the intent is that you're supposed to just be able to walk by these things.
Yeah. They're trying to do the Singapore/Dubai thing of like, if you put enough of these cameras in enough places, as you walk up, you'll just be cleared and they can call you. Like, you'll be standing around, you know, it's almost gate lights problem of like a bunch of people standing around. And the person will be like, Seth. And I have to like push my way through, like, yeah, I'm cleared because it recognized my face before it recognized yours, even though you're in front of me.
But the Houston one was the worst one I've seen yet because they had a separate agent standing next to the machine telling people to step up, stand here, look at the machine. Completely defeats the purpose of the new machines.
Was it a CBP person?
Yes.
Interesting. We should send them a memo.
We could. The way around this, is just for information, is the Global Entry app. if you choose to install it.
And what do you do? Just take a picture of yourself and walk past all this?
Yeah, there's a separate line where if you already cleared, when you come into the Global Entry area, you go to the left. If you're already cleared in the app, you go to the right to go take your picture. So like I got in the line to take the picture because I didn't have the app. Installed the app, cleared myself, and it was still probably number 20 something in the line. And just went to the other line and walked out.
I will say for the American, just sort of talking back to DFW, at least for now, they're not changing the minimum connect time. That was one thing I confirmed.
Yeah.
Though, but you know, to our conversation in recent weeks about like no one picks an airport for convenience or anything else. You pick an airport because that's where you're going. If you are connecting through the United States from London and DFW is one of the options, I would argue that even with the global entry situation, this is probably a good thing and worth something to most passengers.
I mean, this kind of lines up though with the British Airways thing that's being trialed too, right? At Heathrow.
Yeah. Of being able to transit at Heathrow without reclear security. Yeah. It's building on that. So that's if you arrive in if you're connecting on to T3 or T5 from a couple places, I think the DFW is the first one, but
yeah.
You don't have to clear security there either. And I don't know how logistically they make it work there, but
I think we talked about it. I think it's going to be a bus. Like you take a separate bus.
Okay.
So I don't know, but we haven't actually seen it used, so we don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing I thought about is like, they can't just dump you in the terminal at T5 because like if you need to get back to the A pier, you have to walk, or you could take the train, but if you take the train, it doesn't go that way, right? Because you're on the inside security.
I can hear your brain going, this is going to be a pain in the ass to edit.
What makes you think I'm going to edit it?
Just silence. Porter and American are going to have a code share.
Yeah, this came out sort of Friday news dump. They applied for a blanket code share between the two. And basically, you know, looking at this, Delta has WestJet with a equity stake, but not quite a joint venture. United has Air Canada, including joint venture stuff, both for transborder and transatlantic. This is less than that in that it's just a code share, but I think this is the beginning of, seems likely this is the beginning of something more.
I mean, it's good. I mean, I think having a Canadian option, that's one place that American and Alaska have lacked, like they just don't have any coverage.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Well, so it's American only so far. I don't know about Alaska, but yeah.
Well, Alaska has the, I mean, Alaska doesn't have a code share, but they have a partnership with Porter.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, you know, will Porter join One World? Speculation here. I will say the one interesting thing I noted was, all right, American tried to get Connect Airlines off the ground, which was going to be the Porter Air knockoff. They were going to fly Q400s into Billy Bishop in downtown Toronto, and American was basically going to pay for them to fly them from Boston, Philly, and Chicago, and then eventually there'd be other service too. It turns out like they never quite got off the ground. They never got their certification sorted and whatnot, so that didn't happen. But seeing this is like definitely a lesser example, but if you look at it, at this point, none of the Billy Bishop routes are to American hubs, and the flights that are to, there are a couple options. I think Phoenix, LA both have E2s from Pearson, but it'll be interesting to see if, because it's technically just a code share, it'll be interesting to see if Porter decides to add service to American hubs.
American and more American, JFK to LAX is going to or gets a single 772 starting in October.
Yeah, so this was, we've known the 321Ts are not long for this world. And the first one goes in for heavy maintenance at the beginning of October. American is pitching it as, we're going to finally start selling premium economy on our transcons, which, if I remember correctly, both Delta and United already do. They certainly have the planes for it. I don't remember if they sell it or not as premium. But there was speculation and you know, everybody assumed it was a 772, but American didn't say that outright. The schedules are now filed. It's interesting timing. The plane basically gets to LA late in the evening, overnights, and then flies a morning trip back. So I assume they'll do, you know, either cabin cleaning or some light maintenance overnights when necessary. At the JFK end, the timing is such, I think gets in at like 3:45 in the afternoon. So it can either turn around and become the 5:30 back to LA, or I think Madrid or Milan are timed for it, and so it could go over to Europe and rotate through the network that way. So it's not, It's not a truly isolated plane, but it's not super high utilization, let's say.
I mean, so the 321 T's are going away, but are they going to keep them in a premium config, just not with F, right?
The T's are going to get retrofit back to a standard 321 layout, and then the XLRs are coming in with premium.
So is that what they're going to start using on transcons?
And I have to go double check again now. I want to say that they really talked about using the XLRs for other things.
Mm. I mean, it leaves them with a gap unless they're going to bring in more of these wide bodies on JFK LAX and JFK San Francisco.
Yeah, right.
That's what I mean. So it's a gap. Like, are they just going to give up on that as a premium market? I can't imagine that.
No, they're not giving up on that. I may be misremembering this. I'm looking through my notes here and can't find the story I wrote about. We lost Klaus again.
I'm gonna throw this out the window. This app. So you're saying, Fuzz, you think the plan was?
Oh, I believe the plan was to rotate the XLRs through
the transcons and then onward.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only reason I'm a little hesitant on that is that for some reason, I thought they were going to be thin routes out of Philly and Miami, long haul, sort of to Europe and to South America more than transcon. And none of that's through JFK, but we'll see.
Yeah. They could do Philly, LA on a premium product as well. Yeah. Rotate them to JFK that way. But I vaguely recall that it was the plan was to rotate the XLRs through, but when they had enough.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah, and very much so. So, right, like at this point, there's no, they'll keep the flagship service on the transcons and keep that running. But until they have a lot of planes, they're not going to be able to really start stretching their wings, so to speak.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I was doing some research for a trip coming up, and I didn't realize that flagship dining at LAX was pretty much, it's just permanently closed. They have a flagship lounge, but there's no dining room anymore.
There?
Yeah.
Just don't let people into it. I didn't realize it closed it permanently.
That's the rumor everywhere, is that it's gone. So, sad. Fort Lauderdale is getting some boosts. JetBlue add some service? Where are they coming out of Fort Lauderdale? Where are they going out of Fort Lauderdale?
So, JetBlue's adding back Atlanta and Austin, and I think Atlanta's once a day and Austin's double daily, maybe, or once, I don't remember. But they're putting both of those back. Norfolk and Tampa are going to fly. Tampa's a particularly amusing one to me because, right, that is the we want connecting flow to our Caribbean markets, basically.
Mm.
Then they tried this up by me, right? There's a bunch of, like, Manchester, legit right by me, was supposed to connect through JFK for similar reasons, with a late night arrival, early morning departure. That one's going away because it didn't work so well. They're going to do something similar in Tampa. When I looked it up, it was like, by the time December rolls around, like four or five airports where it's, or maybe like eight that made sense into the Caribbean and South America outbound, and only four or so that weren't coming back, but better than nothing.
Yeah. I mean, what is that? Like a 40-minute flight, 30-minute flight?
It's not even.
Yeah.
It was actually my first, believe it or not, I'm pretty sure that was the route that was my first Spirit flight many years ago, was Fort Lauderdale to Tampa. In the original, the old Spirit days.
Yeah. And then Americans adding Fort Lauderdale to Phoenix in the winter?
Yeah. So one of the things JetBlue is doing is, because they're trimming back transatlantic in the winter, as it turns out, there's no spill traffic, and that's mostly what JetBlue seems to be picking up. And certainly there's much less premium traffic, so they're not running a lot of their premium product across the Atlantic anymore for the winter, so they had to figure out somewhere to put it. And so Phoenix, Las Vegas, all the long-haul stuff is getting mint planes for the winter. And so Fort Lauderdale gets, I think it's two a day to Phoenix, three to Las Vegas, and two or three to San Francisco are all going mint. And then also LAX. And so I think they have like 12 or 13 mint departures domestically daily for the winter, and Boston only has 14 or 15. It's very close. And then I'm convinced that, having seen this happening, Americans like, oh shit, we better do something. And it's putting a once a day 321 on it.
Yeah. Yep. And then Spirit is adding Key West.
Key West to Fort Lauderdale, baby. And they specifically target onward connections. They mention it in their press release, but the flight times are terrible for that.
We want connections, just not those connections.
It's like, it's a 10:30 a.m. flight to Key West and then like an 11:30 return that gets in at noon, which doesn't feed anything in the Caribbean.
Hmm.
I will have to go. I somewhere I think I have, let me see if I have it here. I thought I had it. Yeah, here we go. Useful connections Spirit to Key West. From Key West, within 3 hours of arrival at Fort Lauderdale, you've got O'Hare, Atlanta, Richmond, Birmingham, BWI, Lima, and another Atlanta flight. Because, you know, definitely can't fly from Atlanta to Key West on your own. Going to Key West, Norfolk, Virginia, Newark, Detroit, and Charlotte arrive in Fort Lauderdale within 3 hours of the departure. You have a pretty window for connections, and like, there's nothing there.
But isn't that like, okay, so yeah, you can come from Newark and connect to Key West, but you can't get back without spending the night.
Right.
In Fort Lauderdale. Like, that's stupid.
Yes.
Like, that's just Spirit, right? Like, every time I've ever looked at a Spirit connection, it's like a 10 or 12 hour layover.
We've made it cheap by making you spend the night.
Yeah. I mean, I find this on the stock here. The JetBlue ones, San Juan, Montego Bay, San Jose, Costa Rica, and Nassau are the ones that are both directions. But outbound, they add a whole bunch of southbound stuff like Guayaquil, Medellin, Guatemala City, Santo Domingo, Cancun, Punta Cana. So it's a bunch more outbound. But again, even that, like, the return connections aren't great.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Spirit trying to base, yeah, if you're going to do connections, you really want to feed your international stuff, and Spirit's timing for that flight is terrible for it.
And then what's the 100 mil rule changes in Europe? We had them for a while.
We've had them
again?
For 19 years because they started on during my honeymoon.
Yeah, but what's changing? Because there was like the rumor of them going away, and then that died.
The UK sort of rolled them back for a while because they had the new machines. Basically, the answer is anything with the new machines now, the CAT scan machines, like the big round ones, it's going to a 2-liter. And I think it's actually already in effect based on what I remember. So, you can now bring large liquids. The challenge there is it only works at airports that have the new machines. And if you have an itinerary that does at one end and does not at the other, oopsie.
Hope you're ready to check your bag.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's good. It's a good step in the right direction. We're making progress. And then earnings from United, Alaska, American, Southwest.
I see you didn't read the next line before you read that one.
They all reported, right? They had earnings. That's the news. That's what I was going to say. I think the big thing, the rumor mill is stirring. The blogosphere is a flutter. Alaska's new credit card is premium credit card is supposed to come out
next month.
Next month, August.
Yeah. And which is supposed to be like the new unified loyalty program too. It's more than just the card.
Yes. I think that's a good thing. I'm not super excited about what they announced. It sounds like they haven't announced anything. The rumor is lounge passes, a nice sign up bonus, free bags. What else?
Anything unique or just the same?
I think it's the same stuff, except that it's not a lounge access card. So it's not going to be
$400.
It's not. Yeah. I don't know what it's going to be. Maybe it'll be $250. I think you get a bonus for booking tickets on like a bigger bonus for booking Alaska flights using it. Do you remember anything else, Foz? I off the top of my head, I can't remember.
I do not. But what's like, is it really worth it without lounge access?
I don't know. I mean, everyone is wondering, like, is it going to be, yeah, I think that's the big question. Is it going to be worth it? You're going to get some lounge passes, but that, I mean, we've seen in the past, Alaska doesn't honor those because they're full.
I was sitting in line at Boston the other day trying to get into, you know, waiting to go through security or something. The guy behind me was talking to his travel buddy and was like, yeah, I'm really thinking about getting the car, you know, the Delta Reserve card so I can start getting the lounge access. And it's like, those conversations are out there. It's really happening. I did not bother to interject the good luck with that, buddy.
Yeah. And so it's the rumor is $395 annual fee. I pulled up the notes. 3x miles on all eligible foreign purchases. So anything done overseas.
Who else did that? Someone else did that one.
I don't remember. 3x on dining, eligible dining, waived award ticket fees. So the $1,250, I'm assuming that goes away with this card that they collect on every award ticket.
Yeah.
Partner award ticket.
Yeah. and then, Alaska lounge passes, Wi-Fi vouchers, who knows how many, and then accelerated pass to elite status and an innovative travel disruption program. Is that an insurance? I don't know. I'm interested to see what they announce. I don't know that it's going to be compelling enough. the accelerated path to elite status, I think they're going to run into the same problem that other airlines have run into, which is you bloat your top tier elite groups and then you pay the price later.
Yeah. Emirates does a higher earn rate on foreign transactions for some of its HSBC cards
for issued in the UAE. But
interesting.
Yeah, I know. I remember that from somewhere. So that came out last fall.
Yep. And then the other earnings thing, I think, is Southwest had that website issue where the bag fee launch issue, like the bag fee.
Yeah, that was a weird one. It was like, and I didn't see it happen. I didn't hear it in, you know, contemporaneously to the issue. But basically, they put a note in their earnings that the issue with the website, like there was something where when they added the bag fees, the booking flow for basic economy tickets broke. And so their conversions dropped precipitously. And they're like, oh, but we got to fix real quickly. But at the same time, I think they said it's going to be a half point RASM hit for Q2 and a full point in Q3. So like, that's significant.
I mean, they should have been using AI. Would have caught that sooner.
No.
Take that back.
I'm just being facetious, boys.
Wash your mouth out with soap.
That's my mom used to say that a lot. Max 10 news. So they might certify it in 2026.
Maybe.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. I'm not holding my breath.
And then WestJet is going to be the delivery customer, not United. What's this?
That's what it seems to be. United was going to be the original launch, first operator carrier. That seems to have gone by the wayside at this point. I think United certainly still wants them and is putting together a plan for premium, I think. I mean, with the 321 orders that have come along and getting some slots secured over the next few years, maybe United says, screw it, we're putting premium on the 321s. Because United needs something to replace the 757s for whatever we call PS now.
Yep.
The Transcon service. And is it Coast, we called it at one point. But they need something to replace those planes, and they need to know that it's actually going to show up. And maybe they scratch the Max 10s, just convert them back to 8s and 9s and move on. That would be surprising to me, because I think they still want even just regular domestic config 10s if they didn't do the premium ones. But yeah.
Yeah, you'd think they just want the seats.
You need the seats, yeah. And they've got, but I could conceivably see them saying we're more confident in the Airbus delivery timeline, which is still no guarantees. Take those planes, put some premium on some of them, maybe not on others, and just get it done so they can at least retire the 757s and then worry about, bigger domestic planes later.
Yeah, yeah. I think they have to take them just to fill gaps when the 752s bite the dust.
Well, 752s and the 9s.
Yeah, true. And the 753s, they're going to start that process now.
In 26, I think, right? They said they'll be gone in 26.
Yeah, they'll be completely gone in 26. I think they could reconfigure. I mean, we've talked about this before, Foz. They could reconfigure the A321s, the new Neos that they have. Are those XLRs? I can't remember.
No, they're so far, they're not.
They're just Neos, right? Yeah, I don't think they do. I mean, the 321s would allow you to at least get some more F seats if you reconfigured all that. I mean, they got to come up with something with the 753s. I mean, I guess they could use the 763s while they're still around.
All of those retirements were predicated on getting new planes. So
it's 200 seats on the 321 Neo, and the 753 is 234.
Yeah, it's a big plane.
Yeah, so you're losing 30 seats, 34 seats if you went with the 321 Neo. Yeah, it goes, let's see, it goes to, E plus goes to row 21, right? Yeah.
That's 21 second exit row, right? They still doing
it? Yeah, and then on the right side, Foz is right, it goes down to row 26. Row 26, which is four rows behind the wing. Yeah. Kind of wild. And then there's a couple of rows where it's not E plus right at the wing. I don't know what they were thinking, Foz. We got some bonus topics for our Patreon subscribers. We're going to talk about bus gates. 25 for 25 update from Seth, poor guy. Lounge tracking, just some weirdness with United. And then a couple of updates on two separate crashes. So stick around for that if you're a Patreon subscriber. If not, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
See you later.